10. Declan Lynch had a complicated relationship with his family. It wasn't that he hated them. Hate was such a slick, neat, simple emotion. Declan envied people who felt proper hate. He had to sand all the corners off things in order to unequivocally hate. It was a subtractive emotion. Hate was sometimes a prize, but hate was sometimes also just a dick move. It was annoying how many people had small redeeming qualities or depressingly sympathetic motives or other complicating features that disqualified it as an appropriate response. Declan wanted to hate his family. He wanted to hate his father, Neil, for being a bad businessman, for never paying attention to the details, for bullshitting himself to death, for being a bad father, for having favorites who weren't Declan. But could he blame him for not wanting a son like Declan? Declan hadn't wanted a father like Neil. He liked to think he hated him, but he knew it wasn't true, because if it was, he'd have been able to set Neil's memory down and walk away. Instead, he took it out of the box and poked it. Declan said he hated him, but it was aspirational. Declan wanted to hate his dreamt mother, Aurora, but he couldn't justify that either. She'd adored him. She'd adored all the boys. It wasn't her fault she was a faulty model. He was increasingly certain she was happily oblivious to her dreamt status. This was probably where the idea to withhold the same information from Matthew had clucked in. Who'd come up with that? Neil? Declan? It had happened too long ago. In any case, it wasn't Aurora's fault that deep down Declan had always suspected she was untrue. A trick. A Blarney-filled bedtime story for three boys. He didn't hate her. He hated that he'd been naive enough to ever be fooled by her. And Ronan. Ronan should have been the easiest to hate because Ronan was built for acrimony. He despised people and assumed they despised him too. He was stubborn, narrow-minded, completely unable to see compromise or nuance. He'd fought Declan before, which was unremarkable. He'd fought everyone. The world against Ronan Lynch, that was his motto. As if the world cared. Neil had, Declan supposed. That was Ronan's worst sin, idolizing their father. Grow up. But Declan couldn't hate Ronan for this. Now that Declan didn't have to parent Ronan, he no longer had to constantly compete with a ghost. Which left Matthew. In person, it seemed impossible to consider hating the youngest Lynch, but on paper, it seemed impossible to not. Out of all the Lynches, he was the family member who'd taken the most from Declan. Neil had made Declan a liar. Aurora had made him an orphan. Ronan had made him a nag, and then later a fugitive. But Matthew had taken Declan's youth. Declan fed him and read to him, drove him to school events and picked him up from friend visits. The orphan's Lynch. But at least Ronan grew up and out toward independence. Matthew didn't even want to get a driver's license. And could he live alone, really? He was a dream with a head full of clouds, a dream whose feet kept walking him over waterfalls. Goodbye, distant colleges and interesting places. Goodbye, internship offers from Neil Lynch's well-connected clients. Goodbye, carefree, single adult life. Goodbye, whatever Declan Lynch would have grown up to be. Declan should have hated Matthew, but he couldn't. Not jolly, carefree Matthew. Not the innocent, chubby kid who tumbled into Declan's gloomy childhood. Not Matthew, the angelic. Not gonna, fartmonger, Matthew said. Can't make me. It wasn't a request. Buckle your seatbelt. We are in a moving vehicle, Declan said. If I died, Matthew shot back. Couldn't you just ask Ronan to dream a replacement me? If I did, I'd ask him to dream one who always buckled his seatbelt. Do you really want to die in Connecticut? The two brothers were in a loaner car one of Neil's past associates had hooked Declan up with in exchange for the transport of the skittish foreign national currently riding in the trunk with a bottle of water and some potato chips. Declan didn't know why the man needed to be moved secretly from D.C. to Boston, nor did he even consider asking. Declan had just stopped long enough to make sure the hired muscle he'd arranged to watch their backs in Boston remembered where and when to find them. Then he called the second hired muscle he'd gotten to watch the first hired muscle in case the first one got attacked or compromised in some way. Then he talked to the third hired muscle he'd gotten just in case the first two went wrong. Fail-safes. He believed in fail-safes. "You're a twitchy guy," the third muscle had said, then thoughtfully, "You looking for a job?" "Maybe I am the replacement," Matthew continued mulishly. Declan allowed himself one quarter of one half of a picosecond to imagine what it would be like to make the journey to Boston on his own, feeling guilty for all parts of the picosecond. This was his father's DNA, he was sure of it. Neil had felt no compunction about going on trips and leaving his family behind. "Fuck you," he thought. Then, "I hate you." How he wished that was true. Matthew was still going on. "If I were a replacement, I wouldn't even know, would I?" "Mary, please strike me deaf until the state line," Declan said, checking his mirrors, changing lanes, driving safely. He felt Matthew was taking all this a bit far. Declan had put his identity crises on hold multiple times for the greater good. Matthew had only been asked to do it once. "Did you hear a thump?" Matthew asked. "From the back?" "No," Declan said. "Eat your snacks." "Why did I have to go through puberty?" Matthew picked back up where he'd left off. "If I had to be a dream, why couldn't I have superpowers? Why did..." There was a phone ringing from somewhere in the car, which ordinarily would have annoyed Declan, but in this case relieved him. "Turn your phone down," Declan said. "I don't have a phone anymore," Matthew whined. "You made me throw it out." He said it in the most sing-song, younger brother, annoying way possible. "You made me throw it out." "Oh, right." But Declan didn't have a phone anymore either. He'd just thrown out his burner phone at the rest station and was intending to pick up another one after he got to Boston. He wanted badly to pretend that this was evidence of the return of safe, paranoid Declan, but he knew better. This was just what foolish Declan did to justify this insane trip north. He was going to get his car back. Right. Then what's ringing? It was too loud to be coming from the trunk, so it couldn't have belonged to their secret passenger. "Durr, there. It's that," Matthew said, tapping on the loaner car's radio display. "I can't read that. I'm driving. What does it say?" "Connected phone has an incoming call." "There is no connected phone." Matthew's voice was dubious. "I think you ought to look." Declan spared a glance. "Incoming call from," said the display. And then it displayed something that was not quite a number and not quite a name. The something made Declan's mind reel and bend in on itself to even glance at it. He hit the button on the steering wheel to accept the call. "How are you doing this?" he demanded.
"So you're not dead," said a voice through the car's speakers.
"Ronan," Matthew said. Declan felt the usual feeling he got with Ronan. Good news, it was Ronan on the other end of the phone. Bad news, it was Ronan on the other end of the phone. "How do you like it?" Ronan asked. "I call it the megaphone, all caps." Matthew laughed, but the joke sounded a little forced to Declan. He asked, "Are you all right?"
"Don't you worry your curly head. I hear Matthew. What's cooking, shitface? You good?"
"Declan's driving. How good could I be?" Matthew replied. Declan persisted. "Why didn't you call before now? Are you still with Bride? And Hennessy? What's Bride like?"
"You should be getting some miles in, Matthias," Ronan said in that aggressively jovial tone he used when he was making Matthew feel like things were normal and blowing off Declan's concerns. "You gotta get your license eventually, bro."
"Meh," said Matthew. "Maybe."
Hey, Ronan said. "Where are you going anyway? Aren't you supposed to be, like, lying low at the barns?"
"I have an errand in Boston," Declan said.
"Booty call," mouthed Matthew, and Declan shot him a dark look. Ronan said, "An errand? There are fuckfaces out here."
"I can't put off every aspect of life forever," Declan said. Foolish Declan clapped gleefully. Paranoid Declan rolled his eyes.
You said you were going to the Barnes. I assumed you were staying at the Barnes. Now you've left the Barnes.
You sound like Dee, Matthew remarked. Declan told himself not to rub it in, to be the mature one, and then he said, How does it feel to ask for something reasonable and be completely ignored? How does it feel to know you've made plans to keep the family safe and they aren't keeping to them? There was silence for so long that it seemed possible the connection had been broken.
Ronan?
I gotta go, Ronan said, but he didn't go. Declan once again had the curious feeling that their roles had reversed.
I kept my head down for years, Declan said. It wasn't just you. Sacrifices were made by all of us.
Great, Ronan said. My gratitude has turned to 11.
Boston. Sounds great. While you're there, look in on Parrish for me.
It had already occurred to Declan that he was headed to the same place Ronan's boyfriend was going to school, but he hadn't planned on a tête-à-tête.
Paranoid Declan wasn't intending to spend that long in the area. I thought you had the megaphone. Call him yourself, Ronan said.
Yeah.
What's that mean? Did you guys fight?
No, Ronan said, sounding offended. I really do have to go. Keep an eye over your shoulder for, the bogeyman, I guess. Matthew, eat whatever vegetable the Big D tells you to.
Turds, Matthew said.
Turds aren't vegetables, Ronan replied. They're mammals.
You never told me what Bride was like, Declan said.
Ha, Ronan replied. The phone went dead. The Connecticut traffic charged around them in the middle lane.
Declan tried to figure out if the feeling inside him was the usual unsettled sensation that came from every interaction with Ronan, or if it was above and beyond that.
It was time to let Ronan grow up and make his own decisions, surely. Declan didn't need to parent his relationship with Adam. And in any case, who was Declan to talk about relationships?
Ronan didn't need a father figure. He needed to keep on growing up,
he thought.
Probably.
It was harder than before to tell if this was actually right, or if this was just what Declan wanted to tell himself so he could continue on his adventure to Boston.
He sounds happy, Matthew observed.
Yeah, Declan lied.
Maybe he can make it to Mass with us next week.
Are we going to church while we're in Boston? Do I still take communion now that I know I'm not real?
With a sigh, Declan leaned over and buckled Matthew's seatbelt.
I heard the thump again, Matthew said, but without force, from the trunk.
This car might have a bearing going out. These old Jags do that, Declan said. It was an excuse he'd learned from his father before he'd gotten old enough to learn that bearings didn't go out as often as they did for lynches. This wasn't even a Jaguar. Matthew wouldn't notice. Declan didn't even know why he lied about it. The fib was like bubble wrap, the truth carefully kept pristine and untouched for his collection.
Oh, sure, Matthew said. Bearings.
Depending on how one thought about it, Declan's relationship with the criminal underworld was the longest and most stable one he'd had in his life. Declan had a very complicated relationship with his family.